Final hour, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning. And we go to our 102.5, The Game phone line, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. And welcome in Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, brought to you by the NFL Alumni Association. Charles, good morning. How are you?
What's up, gentlemen? How you doing this morning?
Awesome. Appreciate you taking time to be with us. Charles, Will Levis, drafted by the Tennessee Titans at number 33 overall. What did you make of his slide out of the first round and the Titans grabbing him at number 33?
It was interesting. It was definitely interesting. The pick, you know, I'm sure the fan base is happy. I mean, it's value, I think, at that point, considering this was somebody that was definitely debated by the Indianapolis Colts as the fourth overall pick. I think it fills a pressing need definitely for the Titans in terms of giving them a quarterback that's got tools, that's got size, definitely some upside there for Will Levis. I think what was interesting to me was in the pre-draft process, just talking to different teams about him, there was a lot of comparison to, look, Jay Cutler's name came up, you know, just like there's this edge that he has to him where it's, is this cockiness or is it arrogance? I think teams ask themselves that about him. The disparity between the 2021 tape, the 2022 tape, I think some teams were fine with that. You know, he lost the coordinator. The talent around him in 2022 wasn't as good. He was hurt. There were plenty of reasons why he looked like he went from a potential number one overall pick to a questioned product in 2022. But I think really what was most interesting to me about it was after the pick was made, okay, and we're talking about like a whole day later, and what's always fun about the not even a whole day later, I think this was actually on Monday, when you get past the draft, what's really fun is you get a number of teams that suddenly will tell you a lot of things they wouldn't tell you before. And they'll tell you about some draft visits. They'll tell you about, you know, prospects maybe they didn't like, prospects they love, all these different things. And I had a GM who it started to make the rounds, but the first guy that sent me the clip was a GM. He said, "Hey, did you see this?" And it was a clip of them making the pick. And it was Rand Carthon, obviously, on the phone with Will Levis. It gets passed to Amy Adams-Strunk, and then it goes from Amy Adams-Strunk to Mike Vrabel. And he just said, "Hey, did you see this?" And he's like, "You know, just what do you think of this clip?" So I start watching it, and I thought, okay, well, the order of the phone call is interesting. You know, you start picking apart, like, how what you see in terms of the order of who's talking to the prospect. It's still a second-round pick. It was interesting. It went from the GM to the owner and then the coach last. I thought it was interesting watching Mike Vrabel and just his demeanor and then listening to what he was saying to Will Levis. And he's talking about, you know, it was weird. It felt like he was coaching him in the moment about being gracious and having gratitude and being a good teammate and coming in and learning. And I was like, man, that is not stuff that you normally hear right off the bat when you have people who are overjoyed to make this, you know, quarterback pick, and you're so lucky, and there's hugs, and then you kind of get this fist bump, and then Mike Vrabel turns away, and we're off. And like I said, that clip made the rounds. I think people noticed that a little bit and were like, you know, was this pick like a 100% pick? Was everybody on board with this? Was this an ownership pick? It's going to be interesting to sort of see how this all comes together, you know, down the line. But I'll say this about Will Levis. If he goes out and he crushes it, if he makes good on all the talent that he has, no one's going to care about that pre-draft process or why he slipped or whether it's, you know, arrogance or cockiness. If he wins games and he goes out there and plays up to the 2021 tape, it'll be cockiness. It'll be like, oh, he's got that swagger. That's what it will be, and everybody will be happy. So that's a long answer, but it was pretty interesting to let us pick to him.
So, Charles, I mean, it doesn't matter now because it's the picks have been made. The quarterbacks are in place. It's going to be fascinating. I mean, the AFC South is actually interesting. So I don't know how often over the years we could say that, but I find it fascinating. But I do want to put a bow on the Titans intent to trade up, intent to draft CJ Stroud. What, from your perspective, happened there? Was like, did they actually, because, you know, the Cardinals can obviously tell anybody anything they want to when offers are on the table. But do you feel like the Titans did telegraph their pick and that it changed what the Texans were going to do? You told us before the draft about the Texans' idea of getting back up to get the quarterback.
Right. In terms of whether or not they telegraphed it, it's hard to say. I mean, I can tell you this. The Texans knew. The Texans knew who they were competing with. The Texans knew what player. Or at least they felt like they had a handle on what player that the Titans were coming up to get. And so what I was told by multiple, a lot of people involved in this, and this was on the clock, and that, or at least after it all went down, it was later that day, and then in subsequent days, was that the way Arizona handled this was they told Tennessee and they told Houston, we're going to take offers on the pick. We want you to submit the offer the day before. We want the offer on the table. And the way that Houston approached that was when they looked at Tennessee, they were like, we're going to have to overbid here. Like, we're going to have to put something on the table, because what effectively they were being told was Arizona's going to decide on the clock. Like, we're going to have these offers on the table, and then when things get rolling, we're going to make the decision about which offer we like, or whether we just want to stick and pick. And so it was what was crazy about it was that even before the pick, you know, I was texting with people and it was like, all right, well, we don't know yet. Like, we're waiting. We have no clue what exactly Arizona's going to do. And we don't know what the opposing offers are between these teams. Each team didn't seem to know what the other team's offer was. And then obviously I think it got tipped a little bit when I was tweeting out some things or whatever, and Ed Werder, who was with the Texans, was like, well, hey, you know, they can outbid the Titans. And I was like, well, if they're gonna outbid the Titans, they already did. They did it when they're with their first offer. And so I don't know how exactly the Texans knew that CJ Stroud was the player that the Titans wanted to get up there and get. I mean, if you're both kicking tires on the same player, you're both doing the due diligence that you are, and you're both, frankly, trying to basically navigate up from that 11-12 area, maybe, you know, you pick up clues along the way. But they definitely knew, because at one point I was texting with somebody with the Texans, and I said, I don't know, and this was after talking to someone with Arizona earlier in the morning, I was like, I don't know if Arizona really wants to go back that far. They want to get a tackle, and they're afraid that the tackle that they want is not going to be in that area code. And he said to me, well, they only have two choices, 11 or 12. It's like, they're going back far anyway. So they're going to have to figure it out. And so they clearly knew. I think that's why Houston came to the table the way that they did. That's why they offered as much as they did, because they knew, we're not going to have a chance to go back and forth. We just got to make an overwhelming offer and take Tennessee out of it. And it's also why when they kind of went on the clock, they're like, we got to pick the quarterback at two, because we have no clue what ultimately Tennessee offered. We have to just take Tennessee out of the running. So we just take the quarterback at two. If Arizona says, screw it, we're not taking your offer, then we're going to lose Will Anderson. And that stinks, but we're definitely not getting sniped on the quarterback by getting cute and trying to take the defensive player first. And there's a long answer here, but the ideology between what player you selected first was based on who Arizona wanted. They knew Arizona had a super high grade on Will Anderson. So if they passed Will Anderson at two and Arizona decides, we don't like either offer, now we're taking your guy. We're taking Will Anderson because he's, you know, somebody that we think we can stick and pick. You know, you've lost out on, you know, your player there, but they figured that's less likely to happen if we just take Stroud off the board at two. And now Tennessee goes, well, that's our guy. We're not staying in this now. There's no reason for us, though. The whole process was predicated on us getting C.J. Stroud. So now Houston's only competing for competing with Arizona at that third pick at that stage, rather than competing with both Arizona and Tennessee if Stroud's still on the board.
Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll have more with Charles coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, the game. We've got more with Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports, brought to you by the NFL Alumni Association. And Charles, the Titans in the third round selecting Tyjae Spears, running back out of Tulane, who was electric last year. He lit up USC in the Cotton Bowl. So, you know, the player himself, I think a lot of people are excited about, but some reports about his medical coming out after the pick was announced, where some no ACL apparently in his left knee, full thickness cartilage lost in the knee, and arthritis as well. So, number one, what'd you make of the pick of Tyjae Spears by the Titans going running back in the third round? And what do you make of the medical report associated along with it?
Well, you know, you're right. Monster season, you know, at Tulane, a lot to like there from a productivity aspect, you know. And then if you go back and you look at, you know, some of the higher end competition that he played, he fared really well. You know, I think what was it, USC that he killed.
Yeah.
When you talk to people about the tape, I mean, he absolutely showed that he's in a high level draft pick, a definite NFL running back, a guy that could be a lead back and a three down back. But the thing that was concerning was, and it was funny because he ended up on our all juice team, and we named the all juice team. And I had people who kind of pressed and said, the medical's definitely not clean there. I didn't care, obviously, for that purpose. But I found out that a number of teams had taken him off their board because when I say take him off the board, he wasn't even on a sub board. It wasn't like a, hey, we're putting him on a sub board and we get to a certain point, we'll take him. No, they had completely taken him off the board because of the concern about his knee and the thought that he's an extremely high risk when it comes to longevity in his NFL career. Now, I've read what he said, you know, in sort of response to the pushback about the knee in the report. I can tell you that what I had heard from other teams absolutely matches up with what's reported, that, you know, the ACL issues, the thickening, the you know, arthritis, that this is just something where teams thought the ones that were deciding to remove him completely from their selections just thought he could last a year, he could last 5 years. We don't really know, and we're not willing to roll the dice. And that's me paraphrasing here, but that was the feel on him. Again, I, you know, seeing what he said, seeing how he approaches it, you know, him talking about, hey, I'm going to call Frank Gore, all that, that's great and everything. But none of us really know, and I don't think he really knows how this is going to go on the NFL level. So, talent wise, I like the pick a lot. I like the player a lot. Now we just have to see, you know, how does it unfold on the NFL level? And I don't think that's anything any of us can answer. It's a risk. It's definitely a gamble. And when I looked at the Titans draft, I love Peter Skoronski. He was on our all-juice team as well. When I talked to teams, some teams thought, hey, he does have a shot at tackle. Others said, you know, if he doesn't make tackle, he's going to play somewhere on the line and be a high-level starter. They love their flexibility. I thought that was a fantastic pick at 11. You know, we talked about Levis at 33 and the potential complication there and who made the pick and all that stuff. And then 81, they went from, to me, concrete, like building block pick to we're rolling the dice on the next couple of picks and we're rolling it on upside. And if they cash in on the upside, those are two players that people are going to love and whether it's ownership or the general manager or the head coach, whoever gets credit for those picks, if they pay off, it's going to be pretty immense.
So following up on the medicals, because obviously Charles, 2 years ago, it was a kind of a similar situation. I'd say more severe probably just because back stuff it never gets better. And Caleb Farley, we know how that's turned out. And some teams had him off the board. Is it the same teams generally, without asking you to tell us the teams, like, are there some teams that you know of? These are teams that when you have a question like this, they're going to take a guy like that off the board. Or is it more just situational? You know what I mean? Like, are there some teams you know would you, like you would just assume, yeah, a guy like this, they're not even going to mess with them? And how has, if so, how has that worked out? You know, for those teams, have you found them to be, I guess, right more than wrong?
Yeah, it tends to be. Well, first off, when you ask if it's the same teams, the funny thing about the NFL is that staffs turn over so much that it changes. You know, inside like a 10-year period, it can, you know, oh, it's the same team. Wait a couple of years, and oh, that whole front office is gone, and the coaching staff is gone. So it's no longer that team that approaches it unless it's coming down from ownership. And if it's coming down from ownership, it's typically ownership got burned in a big way on some kind of player that they invested in, and they're not willing to, you know, take those risks. But I think that also maps with whether it's general managers who have come up through the scouting ranks, whether it's coaches that, you know, are retreads or have gone through this process before. It's just, have you dealt with gambling on a medical? And if it doesn't pay off, you know, and especially if it's the first time you gamble on it, or the first couple of times you gamble on it, you just stop. You're like, well, enough. I remember this. I remember the Frank Gore is not going to last more than a few years in the NFL because of this litany of injuries he had in college. And obviously he was like the Terminator once he got into the NFL. It's crazy. You know, so I do think it's every single team goes through it. Every single team, you know, the medical is such a huge part of the assessment on a player, particularly if there have been injuries. What changes is whether or not some teams will put players on subboards. So if people don't know what those are, subboards are basically you're taking someone off your board and you're flagging. You know, however your draft system works, you give them a certain dot, which is a color, and that tells you there's a character problem here we don't like. There's an injury problem here we don't like. There's something that's removing him from, you know, what our normal process would be. But what you do then, risk and reward plays into it. You get to a certain point in the draft and you go, you know what? We're fine. We're at this point on our subboard, we're willing to take the player because the reward far outweighs the risk. And a guy like Spears, I'll give you an example. So two teams that I talked to about him brought this up in the all juice process, and one indicated that they were told by the coaching staff, there's absolutely no way we're allowed to draft this player. Like it was clear that the coaching staff had, you know, a background with injuries. They were not interested in of all positions in particular, bringing in a running back who could potentially have problems like this. And then there was a second team that told me, you know, we think like this is a guy that, especially if he gets down the fourth round area, or if he starts to plummet because of this, and you know, we'll absolutely take him in like the fourth, fifth area, because if it doesn't work out, hey, it's a running back. You can get running backs, but the talent is special enough that if his medical was perfect, he would probably be well inside the top two rounds, and we're willing to roll the dice. And hey, even if he comes in place for, you know, 2 years, if he's a fourth round pick and we get 2 years of top end production out of him, we'll live with that. There's no problem with that. So it changes from one team to the next. I think fans just got to cross their fingers on this one and hope that he's as healthy as long as he possibly can be. And, you know, I wish him nothing but the best. I hope he has a great career, because he was a lot of fun to watch on the tape when we were putting that team together.
Charles Robinson with us here on Robbie and Rex Road. Charles, the Lamar Jackson saga finally comes to an end. 5 years, $260 million, $185 million guaranteed. They draft Zay Flowers in the first round. We know Odell Beckham Jr. is with the Ravens now. What do you make of the way this has now played out for the Baltimore Ravens and for Lamar Jackson?
Yeah, so Lamar Jackson's world all of a sudden, right? Yeah. Like, is this guy going to be on the roster too? Everything all the boats came in at once for him. He didn't need an agent because he just used Jalen Hurts' agent. He was like, all right, they docked this huge deal. And it was interesting when the Hurts deal got done, and I think we might even talk about it. I was like, you know, this could potentially be an icebreaker for Lamar Jackson and the Ravens, because, you know, it wasn't the Deshaun Watson deal, but it was effectively the next biggest deal on the table. And maybe the Ravens are sitting there going, you know, Lamar, we'll give you this deal plus a little extra, and you can feel good about this, and you're going to hold on to that deal until the next round of quarterback contracts come in. And hey, by the way, that might be a while, because at least the next two we're looking at, it's Herbert and the Chargers with ownership that doesn't want to dole out that money, any more quickly than they have to. It's Burrow and the Bengals, and Mike Brown doesn't want to dole out that money. So, you know, you're going to hold this perch for a while. You can feel good about it. We went and got you Odell, and I would guess that they had told Lamar going into this draft, hey, they're, you know, they had him look at players, and there are certain guys we like going in. Let's see if maybe there's a position for us to help to add to the receivers. So, you know, no doubt Jackson's got to be loving this right now. He just went from, you know, a set of wide receivers that was bereft of having high impact options. And some people, I think, had Zay Flowers. I think most everybody had Zay Flowers high on their board. I think some had him at two. I never heard anyone that had him over Jackson, Smith, and Jigba, but I know some teams really, really liked him. They kind of compared his game to Steve Smith, and you know, putting he and Odell together in that set of receivers and the surrounding skill positions, it's going to give Lamar plenty to feel good about, at least in 2023. I mean, obviously Odell's only on a 1-year deal, so in the interim, the short term, that's definitely they should be able to compete. That offense, if you look at that offense, you look at the two deep, if everybody stays healthy, they should be able to compete in the AFC scoring points. I don't know defensively how that'll break down, but offensively, they should be able to go out there and score points.
Charles Robinson, our guest on Robbie and Rex. So, Charles, before I let you go, I do want to get your thoughts on the Detroit Lions draft, taking a running back at 12 and a linebacker at 18.
Jeez, yeah. Look, and then tight end. Yes. And I'm a big Sam Laporta guy, by the way. I think what was wild to me is when they went into the draft, especially when they're sitting there at six, I thought, okay, well, they're in a good position. 6 and 18, they're going to walk away with at least one of these is going to be spent in some aspect on a premium, you know, like position on the team. It's going to be a corner. It could be an edge. It could be Jalen Carter, which isn't technically a premium position at defensive tackle, but he factors into pass rush, and that's premium. They're going to walk out of here with something. And then I made the joke that they were like, they thought they were drafting in like 1989, because they're like, yeah, let's take a running back high, we'll take an off-the-ball linebacker, you know, really high. And all of a sudden, I'm like, is Chris Spielman running the draft by himself? did he lock everybody out? And he's, you know, Spielman's at the control, turning into all the cars. It was interesting, but I will say this. When you look at their top four picks, I got it, because they were all guys that, you know, Brian Branch, safety, when you take a linebacker where you do, a running back where you do, a safety where you do, and then a tight end, they all look like guys that could step in and play right away. So they're going to have maybe day one starters at the top four picks. But really, I think what caused this was I don't think they realized how much love the Seahawks felt for Devin Witherspoon. And I don't think they were prepared for Devin Witherspoon to go off at five. And then when he did, I don't want to say there was panic, but then all of a sudden you had this situation where they're like, okay, that's not, we got to do something here, because that was our guy. And now we no longer feel like we have someone that we want to take at six. And that's what led to them trading back. They didn't want to take the gamble on Jalen Carter's maturity. And, you know, that was just basically the premium player they had at that position. And after that, they felt like we're going to move back and collect picks. I don't know. We'll see. Here's the thing that I will say about this. I hate draft grades. I hate it. I hate my own propensity to look at class. I hate to bust on teams. And, you know, I kind of made the joke, like, the night of the draft, like, draft grades are like us working out, you know, all day in the gym, and then immediately afterward walking in and, you know, into Five Guys and ordering a triple cheeseburger. Like, we know it's a bad idea. We know it's bad for us, but we do it anyway because we like it. That's what draft grades are.
Sounds like my daily routine.
Yeah. I mean, we spent all this time working up to this, you know, all this time and effort, and then immediately we bust out a triple cheeseburger afterward, which is just dumb, because really, we're not going to know. Remember the 2020 draft? Oh, yeah. I just wrote a piece about the 2020. Oh, my gosh, it's going to be all about tape. And these are all, we're throwing out all these extra visits and all this stuff that clouds everybody's judgments. We're going to the tape. The tape's going to be really, we got the combine, and we're just going to crush tape on all these players, and we're going to see what the results are. You know what the results were? 20 guys didn't have their fifth-year option picked up, okay, in the first round. 62.5% of the first round, a record, didn't have their fifth-year option picked up for a multitude of different reasons. But to me, it tells you, yeah, the whole tape thing and all this extra work, you know, that didn't work. There's a reason why you put in all the extra time. There's a reason why you take premium players at premium spots. And, you know, the instantaneous grades after 2020, you can throw all those out because teams just showed you their own assessment. There's nothing better than the fifth-year option because that is a team telling you whether or not they failed. If they don't pick up that fifth-year option, that's an indicator that they failed. If you're the Packers and you go, yeah, we could pay Jordan Love $20 million, but instead we're going to sign him to a one-year contract that only guarantees him like a little over 13. That's a hedge, and that's telling you what they think of Jordan Love. They're hedging their risk on Jordan Love. That's a negative, okay? So, yeah, draft grades suck. That's my banging on my podium right now. You know, go to Janet Jackson, Joe, enjoy it, Rhythm Nation, all that.
Oh, yeah.
But, you know, draft grades suck.
Don't worry.
That's right.
Don't worry. Oh, I will, buddy.
Charles Robinson.
We'll send you some video of Katie and I dancing just like the old days.
Looking forward to that.
Yes. Charles, great stuff as always, man. Really appreciate your time this week, and we'll talk to you next week.
All right. Take care, gents. Appreciate it.
All right. Charles Robinson from Yahoo Sports joins us every week at 8 from 8 to 8:30 here on the program. A lot to react to there from Charles. We'll do that next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 102.5, 106.3, The Game, presented by TJ Anderson, homes of Benchmark Realty, where their advanced pay by TJ option can save you thousands when selling your home. We're streaming live on Twitch, Twitter, YouTube, and Facebook. Our video streaming brought to you by Superbook. We're live from our 102.5 The Game studio, brought to you by Hiller Plumbing, Heating, Cooling, and Electrical. Thanks to Charles Robinson for joining us in the last segment. Joe, some reaction on the text line to Charles's thoughts from other teams telling him, looking into Vrabel's reaction to the Will Levis pick. Got Jim from Nashville says, Charles and his source are reaching on the Vrabel video. Vrabel has made that speech before with draft picks, and Glenn from Greenbrier says, is this where we are, dissecting phone calls after the draft? This is from Glenn from Greenbrier.
Yeah, well, to Glenn, I said, well, look, you can complain if you want, but he's not dissecting it. He's telling us what other teams told him when they dissected it. Now, again, this is, and we're getting it with Charles. He gives us a glimpse at, you know, kind of the sewing circle, right? These teams like whisper about each other and stuff.
Oh yeah.
And I think people are right. Someone tweeted too that I can't remember a Vrabel, one of those calls. Vrabel's like, yay, I love you, can't wait. You know what I mean? I mean, yes. Vrabel is kind of instantly into coach. So I think there's some truth to those of you saying, you know, with Charles or other GMs, other teams, really, that's what he's getting this from. Maybe there's a little bit of like, this is kind of how he does it. I will say this. Today we've talked a lot about Kaharski and I yelling at each other. One thing that also happened in the media room over the draft is I kept saying, Levis, come on, Levis. And, you know, PK's like, what are you talking about? That's ridiculous. No way. You know, just because I knew he'd be mad about it. But as soon as they made the move, I was like, God, do you guys think that Amy just was like, you guys are getting a quarterback today. I'm not letting Houston take our quarterback, and then we're not getting a quarterback. That's the first thing that I said. It is interesting. Someone bringing up that you go Ran, Amy, then Mike. It's not, I don't think that's normally how you see it done, but I guess whatever. You get a phone. You could look into this stuff, and you can also dismiss any looking into this stuff.
Well, yes. The point being, like, Charles is not making this up. Like, this idea that, like, Glenn responded back and said, other teams are worried about Vrabel's phone call with Levis. Okay. Well, yeah, like, Charles is not making this up. Like, he's getting this from other teams in the NFL. He literally said it.
Again, this is what they do. They talk about each other. Okay. So, yeah, like it or not, they did. They may be totally off base. And I agree with you guys who are saying that's kind of, it's kind of a little bit more standing operating procedure for Vrabel than not. Agreed. You know, just sort of like, all right, be a good teammate and, you know, go eat your Wheaties now. We'll see you next week, you know, rather than like, oh, I'm so excited, you know. But it's interesting. I mean, again, my I did have the thought of, did Amy just say, you guys, get me a quarterback today. I don't care what you do. You get me that quarterback.
Oh, that's interesting to think about. I mean, look,
it happens.
I don't know, and obviously they're not going to come out and say that. So we may never know whether it was everybody's on board. We want Will Levis. That's our guy. Was it A.B. Adam Strunk saying, you better go get this quarterback because we need a quarterback? We'll never know the answer to that. But, you know, one of the things that we've talked about is if you loved Will Levis, he was there for 11. There's no way you could have known for sure that you were going to be able to trade back up and go get him. So if you loved him, why didn't you take him at 11? I realize that you can find countless examples of quarterbacks taken not in the first round that have been successful. But the point being, like, what obviously, and we just heard Charles talk about it, C.J. Stroud was their original target. And I know some Titans fans just don't want to believe that, but the picture is what it is. Like, that's what it was. That was the original target for the Titans.
That's 100% fact. So I don't know why, like, that's, if anybody's arguing against that, like, you just don't want to believe what's been very clearly laid out in reporting. As far as, yeah, the Levis thing, it's kind of like middle school dating. It's like, okay, I like her. Yeah, but do you like her?
Yeah.
You know?
Yeah.
Are you talking? Maybe, are you exclusive?
Yeah.
Well, we called it going.
I was about to say.
Who are you going with?
Yeah, there's going. I was going to say Joe was old enough for going steady.
Joe is going steady.
I am not that old, for crying out loud. But I did know some swell girls in school.
Good.
They were swell.
That's very good. 615-737-1025. We'll have more of your thoughts on the Titans. React to Charles Robinson and some of the things he had to say. We'll get into the Tyjae Spears medical because I thought his information on that was really interesting as well. We'll get into that coming up next. This is Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Welcome back in, Robbie and Rex Road, 1025-1063, The Game. Robbie Stanley, Joe Rex Road, Michelle Knezovic here with you on this Thursday morning. Taking your thoughts on our text line, 615-737-1025. Lots of participation again today. We appreciate that on the text line today and every single day, driven by WilsonCountyHyundai.com. Tyjae Spears, third-round pick for the Tennessee Titans, Joe. And we've talked about his medical with the cartilage in the knee, the not having the ACL and the arthritis that goes along with it. Charles Robinson on with us earlier this hour. If you missed it, go check out the Robbie and Rex Road podcast. You can find that on Spotify, Apple, wherever you get your podcast. Some really interesting things that Charles had to say about the medical reports. Some teams having him completely off the medical, not even on the subboard, as Charles put it. What did you make of what Charles had to say about Tyjae Spears, the medical, and the risk that this is for the Titans in the third round?
Yeah, like I would love to know. That's why I asked him. And he had a good nuanced answer, of course, about turnover and all that stuff. But I'd love to know how many of the teams that took Spears completely off were the same teams that took Farley completely off 2 years ago. I bet you there'd be a little bit of carryover because some teams are just more, like you said, maybe you got a particular owner who has been burned in particular by something like this. And we could probably do some looking back on drafts and figure out maybe a couple who were, you know, and sort of like, okay, guys, we're not doing this anymore, you know. But it's more confirmation, you know. The Rappaport, I believe, was the first one who had, I guess, the severity of the situation kind of laid out there. And as Charles said, like, that's, there's, he's not like on some island with that. So it's a risk. It's a big risk. Fantastic talent, but also at a position that, like, this year, I mean, you know, he's third down back. I think he's the third down back. I think he'll be the third down back over Hassan Haskins. But How much time are you going to get out of him? Is he good enough to be Derrick Henry's successor next year? Will he still be healthy by then? I mean, so many questions with that. It's, again, I mean, watching him play, he is fun to watch.
Yeah.
So, like, they're like, I get it, but man, I guess, like you said, it's, you know, when they said the medical people signed off, Rand Carthon said that at the press conference, or, you know, they said it was fine, basically. What you, we don't get the full detail on that, but what I'd love to know is, like, was there an estimated timeline?
Right.
You know, if they're like, you know what, 3 years, he's good, then okay. I mean, then I think, like, basically you were taking running backs for the most part, unless you have Derrick Henry, you're taking running backs for the rookie deals, and then you're looking for the next running back. That's just how this league is anymore. But how could you feel confident? I mean, Charles said it, like, how do we really know what the timeline is? How could anybody really say that confidently? And of course, as we know, with Titans medical information, and it was a little different back then, they didn't have the same access in 21 they do now. It's back to normal, but the Titans medical people signed off on Caleb Farley. We know how that's worked.
Well, isn't this a big deal for them, though? Like, the medical staff with the Titans, right? Like, we've talked about, you know, the issues that they've had with injuries the last couple of years. You signed off on Caleb Farley to make that draft pick, and now you've signed off on this guy in Spears. And again, I like the player. I think he's really good. But if other teams had him off the board, and this ends up not working out for the Titans, and he gets hurt this year, or he gets hurt a year down the road and he can't play anymore, or this just doesn't go well from an injury standpoint, like, at what point are you, if you're A.B. Adams Strunk, are you looking around and saying, all right, well, why is our medical information so much different? Like, why are all these other teams have Caleb Farley off their board and we don't? Why do all these other teams have Tyjae Spears off the board and we don't? And we got all these injuries that we've dealt with. Like, why is this continually happening? Like, it's a big deal for Tyjae Spears to work out for this group, I think.
I agree. Like, you would think possibly that Farley might inspire you to become a little bit more cautious organization, you know? I mean, everybody rips on J-Rob. I mean, it's every time there's a hurt player, let's tweet out the picture of J-Rob. Oh, J-Rob's excited, you know? Maybe it wasn't just J-Rob. There are scouts. There are other people. You know, he had, of course, Ossenfort and Cowden under him. By the way, I'm very interested, like I said earlier, Ryan Cowden, where he ends up, if he does indeed move on somewhere. I think Ryan Cowden could be a GM. But you have those guys. You have Vrabel. You have a lot of different people. And like you said, Robbie, ultimately you have to lean on the medical expertise. I mean, Farley, it started with, you know, an ACL tear for him, right?
Right.
So, and then, but still, and now it's gone. I mean, it's the entire picture of him was the question of, like, you know, is he just a guy who's just a little bit too fragile to play in this league? You could ask that big picture question even apart from the back. And so far that's proven to be the case. So you would think a sign off on Spears would be heavily, heavily questioned by the people making the choice here.
Well, you would think, and like you said, I mean, the Titans came out in the press conference and said that the medical people gave it the okay and that they're okay with the medical, which is great. The other part of this is, Joe, I mean, it's not the same situation as Caleb Farley. Number one, I agree with you. Like, when you start talking about back, that's a little bit more of a red flag heading into the draft. And Caleb Farley was a first-round pick, so it is different. But, like, a third-round pick is not insignificant. Like, you should still get a good player that can help you, hopefully, for, you know, a good while here in the third round. And I know last year they took Malik Willis, and that situation's different and all that stuff. Like, the third round here, especially when you don't have a fourth-rounder, which the Titans didn't have, like, that's not an insignificant pick here.
No. Well, the fourth round is not an insignificant pick either. And last year in the fourth round, they took Hassan Haskins, presumably to have a shot someday at maybe replacing Derrick Henry, sharing carries with Derrick Henry, some third down work, whatever it may be. The fact that they took a back in the third round, I understand they like the player a lot, but also doesn't that kind of speak to last year, to this being yet another do-over? But I do think that Spears could be a weapon this year. Mentioned it a couple days ago, Dontrell Hilliard was, and kind of by necessity, but it was a big part of their offense last year, especially in the red zone, that they need to get that at least out of Spears quickly.
Craig on the text line says, at what point do you start replacing a strength and conditioning coach when it comes to the soft tissue injuries? Also, does that have more to do with the drills and exercise plans they have or how hard individuals train? This is from Craig on the text line.
Yeah, I just...
I mean, they just won Trainer of the Year, didn't they?
Yeah, I mean, yeah, that's Trainer. But, you know, the strength coach, you know, I don't know, man. I mean, look, the way Vrabel laid it out was that some players either they do too much, they don't do exactly what they're asked, whatever the case may be. He put it on the players. So he clearly believes in the strength staff. He's kept them the same. On some things like this, I think I would tend to probably just trust Vrabel. But, I mean, look, I think the question's fair.
I think it's important to point out, like, strength and conditioning coach and medical staff getting medicals on draft prospects are two different things. Like, it's not the same thing.
Yes, for sure. But it's all kind of in the same. I mean, I get people are looking for answers. Why so many injuries, and why are they okay with taking injured players?
That's going to do it for us today here on Robbie and Rex Road. We'll have a lot to discuss tomorrow as well. Jared Stillman joining the show at 7, TD at 8. So looking forward to that. Chase and Shell up next. This is 102.5, 106.3, The Game.